Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Welcome to the serialized audiobook of The All-Pro, Season 4 of the Galactic Football League series. Written and performed by Scott Sigler. The All-Pro is also available as an ebook, a paperback, and as an ad-free, unabridged audiobook. For links to purchase any version, visit scottsigler.com/theallpro, one word, no spaces, or find it at scottsigler.com/books.
The first security guard came out of the bathroom, stepping over the yellow tape running between two orange cones.
"All clear," he said. "Janitor's in there, but I patted him down. He's just fixing something. He's clean. Go on in, Mr. Barnes. We'll keep an eye out for you."
"Thanks." Quentin stepped over the yellow tape and walked in. From far behind him, down in the stadium, he heard the roar of the bloodthirsty crowd and wondered who had been eaten. Inside the bathroom, he saw the janitor repairing a nanite hand-cleaning machine. The wall-mounted device hung open, various parts and tanks sitting on towels on the tile floor. If Quentin hadn't known Frederico was the janitor, he would have never recognized the man. When in his normal state, Frederico was 6 feet tall, about 200 pounds, and in his mid-30s. He always looked like he just stepped out of a tough guy detective holo. The bearded, slouched-over schlub in the bathroom, however, looked like he was pushing 50 and would need a crane to help him stand up straight.
"Excuse me," Quentin said. "I need to use the facilities."
The bearded janitor looked up, saw Quentin, then looked around the bathroom, checking to make sure no one else had crept in. Normally, even while in disguise, Frederico looked confident, calm. Now, however, his eyes carried a haunted look, as if there was someone or something stalking him. It had been months since Quentin had seen this man. Months that Frederico had supposedly been out hunting for Quentin's family. Had the search finally produced results?
"You surprise me," Quentin said. "I thought this Dynolition thing was legit, but you set up the tickets?"
Frederico shrugged.
"Rachel Gesford owes me a favor or three. I had to contact you while you were away from Ionath to make sure no one knew I was trying to reach you."
That didn't sound good. Only John Tweedy knew Frederico was working for Quentin. Quentin and Frederico both wanted to keep that information away from Greedock the Splithead.
"Fred, are you okay? I know how much you like to play dress-up and all, but is something wrong?"
The janitor nodded.
"Yeah. Someone doesn't want me to find out about your family. I've spent the last few weeks ducking some pretty heavy hitters."
Heavy hitters? And who could that be? The same group that bombed the victory parade? Or maybe sentients who worked for the owner of the Ionath Krakens?
"Who were they? Greedock's gang?"
Frederico shook his head.
"I wish I knew. I can't say for sure if they're his goons. And they're not the only ones. That little reporter piece of fluff was also on McCovey, digging away."
"Piece of fluff? You mean Yolanda Davenport?"
Frederico nodded.
"That's the one. I was at McCovey Stadium seeing if the Raiders had any info on your past, and she was there."
"Did she see you?"
Fred laughed.
"Quentin, please. I'm a professional."
"What was she doing on McCovey?"
"Digging into the history of Quentin Barnes, just like me. Just like the heavies I ran into."
"She find anything?"
"I don't know," Frederico said. "I don't think she found much.
She seemed to be looking for real specific stuff, stuff about your time with the Raiders, not about your childhood. The hitters, on the other hand, they wanted the same info I found. They always seemed to be just a step behind me.
So, you did find something.
Quentin waited for him to speak, but the man seemed to have trouble finding the words.
Well, come on, Fred, out with it.
Federico looked at the ground, shrugged his shoulders.
You sure you want to know this, Quentin?
It had to be bad news. But was it all bad news? Was Quentin really alone? He took a breath, let it out slowly, and tried to brace himself for the words.
Yeah, I want to know. All of it.
Okay, Fred said. I managed to find a family record based on DNA. I used some of your blood.
You didn't ask me for my blood.
Federico shrugged.
You're religious. Who knows what you superstitious primitives think is sacred?
I bleed all the time on the field, Fred. You really assume I would think blood is sacred?
There's no logic in religion, Quentin. Anyway, if you said no, I would have been out of an option, so I went with it.
And where, exactly, did you get my blood?
Nanocyte patch back in Ionath Stadium, Federico said. Not hard to come by, Quentin. As you mentioned, you bleed a lot. You knew a guy on Mokovi named Sam Sargsyan? Ran a barbecue restaurant?
Sam Sargsyan. Mr. Sam. That brought back memories.
Yeah, what's he got to do with it?
Nothing, Federico said. I met him, though. He said you like to eat. A lot.
I weigh almost 400 pounds, Fred. Of course I eat a lot. You're stalling. Come on, tell me.
Fred chewed on his lip for a second, then nodded.
You're right. I'm stalling. The Purist Nation records are scattershot at best. Their technology's about 400 years behind everyone else's. But I found the death record for your older brother.
Quentin nodded. No news there. When Quentin had been 5, he'd watched his brother hang for the horrendous crime of stealing bread.
Turns out your name isn't Barnes, Fred said. At least, not originally. Looks like your family changed names. I'm not sure why.
So, what's my real name?
Carbonaro, Fred said. I found it on your brother's death record.
Carbonaro. Quentin wasn't even Quentin Barnes? He'd never heard the name Carbonaro before. Maybe that was his birth name, but he'd been Barnes all his life and would continue to be so.
Your brother's death record led me to your mother and father, Federico said. I could find no official death record of your father.
Quentin felt a stab of excitement in his chest, but he tempered it. No record of death did not mean his father was alive.
What's my father's name?
Killian Carbonaro.
A name. Such a simple thing, and yet it made the man somehow real. There was no proof that Quentin's father was dead.
He might be out there. Maybe. That's a start, Quentin said. And my mother?
Federico paused, then shook his head slowly.
Her name was Constance Carbonaro.
Wisps of memory bubbled up. A woman with tight, curly black hair, smiling down at him. Quentin couldn't quite form her face. His mother.
And she's...
He couldn't say the words.
She's dead, Quentin. I found her record. It's accurate, no question. I'm sorry.
Quentin had felt elation at learning his father's fate was unknown. The news of his mother made that feeling fade, then sink. His mother. Gone. The woman he suddenly remembered, young, too young to have children, but that was how it went on Mokovi. Children by 14 or you were a sinner. There were other memories, little bits and pieces that didn't connect. Brief recollections of being held, being talked to in a voice that made the monsters go away. A voice that made everything all right.
There's more, Federico said. You told me about your brother, but you said you didn't have any other siblings.
Quentin nodded, finding it was hard to even move that much. The remote possibility that his father might not have died in Mokovi couldn't blur the hammer thud pain of knowing his mother was gone forever. Everything felt heavy. It even hurt a little to breathe.
Why did you tell me that? Federico asked. Why didn't you tell me you had a sister?
Quentin stared at the smaller man. The words didn't seem to make sense.
I don't have a sister.
Frederico smiled.
Well, if the records are accurate, you do. Janine Carbonaro. She's about 10 years older than you. She would have been about 15 the time your brother died.
A sister?
That couldn't be true. But what if it was? The sluggish feeling brought on by the knowledge of his mother expanded, spread. A creeping sensation that more bad news was about to hit home.
And my sister's record? Did you find a death record on her?
Frederico shook his head.
Don't get too excited, okay? Just because I didn't find a death record doesn't mean
that she's alive. I know. I get it, Frederico. You can stop repeating that, okay?
Frederico nodded.
Right. Sorry. It's just, well, you really wouldn't be much of a poker player, Quentin. I can see the hope in your face.
We're not playing poker.
Quentin could hide expressions when he needed to, when he wanted to. Enough to even fool Greedock the Splithead, a sentient who could read your body temperature, your pulse. The game of manipulation ran rampant through all things GFL. Quentin had committed himself to learning that game, mastering it.
It's the eyes, Frederico said. A dead giveaway every time.
You're not going to start talking about how pretty my eyes are again, are you?
Frederico smiled, shook his head.
No, not at all. To tell you the truth, when we first met, I did that just to get a rise out of you. You're okay looking by the numbers, but you're not really my type.
I wish I could say I was offended by that.
The roar of the crowd made them both look at the door. Frederico nodded.
You need to get back to your date. If you want, I'll keep looking for more info.
I do, Quentin said. Just find whatever you can. Even death records give me some idea, you know?
Frederico nodded, then turned his attention back to the nanite machine. He was probably going to actually repair it. That struck Quentin as an odd touch for a meeting that took this much effort to set up, but Frederico seemed to be all about the details. Quentin turned and walked out of the bathroom. The two guards were waiting for him.
Everything okay, Mr. Barnes?
Yeah, fine. Hey, I had some new Radina food this morning. It caught up with me is all. Let's head back down.
The guard nodded.
Yes, sir, Mr. Barnes. We missed the second round. The wheel picked 4 laps and the stompers took it. They just spun the wheel for round 3. It's Capture the Flag, my favorite. You'll love it, Mr. Barnes. This one is really bloody.
Quentin let the guards walk him back down the steps. Compared to the first round of Dinolition, he could only imagine what really bloody could mean.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey, Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Nothing in the galaxy could possibly be as exciting as playing football. Just watching it, however, proved a surprisingly close second. Quentin had no emotional involvement with a T3 tourney championship game between the Mathara Manglers and the Oknot Archangels. He wasn't rooting for anyone, didn't know a player on either team, and yet his heart pounded as time ticked away. Fourth quarter, Oknot up 13-10, and he was on the edge of his seat. Affectionately known as the 2 weeks of hell, the single elimination tournament featured 32 teams playing games every 3 days until a sole champion remained. In that 2 weeks, 30 games had been played across the League of Planets' 5 worlds and 2 net colonies. The championship game, of course, took place in the crown jewel of the system's football stadiums, the Shipyard, home field of 3-time GFL champion Hitoni Hullwalkers. Quentin would be back in this very stadium in week 4 of the Tier 1 season, some 6 months away. Like every football-crazed kid, he dreamed of playing in the Shipyard, just like he dreamed of playing in Tow Pirate Stadium and the galaxy's other gridiron meccas. This year, however, one dream, one stadium, rose above all others. The Tomb of the Virili, home field of the Y'all Criminals. Not because Ionath played at Y'all in Week 2 in the showcase that was Monday Night Football, but because this year, the stadium hosted the sport's ultimate game, Galaxy Bowl 26, where the GFL champion would be crowned, where Quentin and his teammates would join the ranks of legend. But that conquest was many months away, and would not happen without adding some fresh blood to the Kraken's roster. That meant scouting the Tier 3 tourney, looking for players that Greedock might sign. What little he'd seen of Hitoni stunned him. Everything from the towering buildings, to the 3 decks of Grav Roads, to the citizens. So many different human variants. Some were modified so heavily they would have never been allowed on a football field. Skin colors, grafts, implants, cybernetics, countless thousands who seemed to treat the human body as a canvas or a lump of clay, to be beautified according to a myriad of personal tastes. That was the League of Planets for you, the technological capital of civilization. When it came to building ships or building bodies, the League stood above all others. Hitoni wasn't as densely populated as the insanity he'd seen on the Scalorno world of Alamum. Quentin had been there during the Tier 1 season for the Kraken's game against the Armada, seen a planet with 80 billion sentients, a city with 5 billion sentients packed in tight. Hitoni, by comparison, had just over 1 billion in the massive area considered the city proper. But while Alamum was far more congested, Quentin hadn't left the private, guarded areas of the football stadium. Hitoni was a human planet, mostly blue-skinned humans, true, but humans nonetheless. And as such, Quentin had enjoyed a rare, semi-anonymous walk around the stadium, as if he were just another sports fan. The stadium itself was a museum documenting the history of space travel. The League of Planets had collected many ancient pre-punch drive vessels. These floated free on grav pads lining the stadium concourse. Quentin, Hokor, and John Tweedy had walked a slow lap around the shipyard, looking at priceless relics with names like Pioneer, Challenger, Icarus, Sputnik, Voyager, Helios, Shenzo, Aurora, JAXA, and more. Quentin found it fascinating that the birth of football and the birth of human spaceflight had occurred within just a few decades of each other. Coincidence? He didn't think so. He'd been recognized several times on the walk around the concourse. It was a football stadium, after all. Once his league-appointed bodyguards allowed the fans to approach, Quentin signed every message board thrust his way. Many fans asked Tokor as well, but the coach didn't like to talk to anyone and had his guards keep everyone away. Tokor, it seemed, harbored far more fear from the victory parade bombing than Quentin did. The bombing wasn't far from the minds of the Kredorakians, that was for sure. The small, winged creatures flew overhead in multiple flocks of 5, 10, even 20. There were far more than Quentin had ever seen before, even back on Makovey during his PNFL days. The creatures ruled here, in the League of Planets, just like they did in most of the galaxy. Bodies roughly the size and shape of a football, with a flat, 2-foot-long tail that paralleled the ground. 2 pairs of foot-long arms, stacked on top of each other. The bottom arms held the ever-present entropic rifles. The top arms flapped madly, flying via the vein membrane that ran from the tiny hands all the way back to the tip of the tail. And then those disgusting heads. 3 pair of eyes. 1 pair that sat on either side of the head, looking out to the left and the right. 1 pair up front, letting them see all before them. And 1 pair looking down, giving them a perfect view of the ground beneath. Their skin held various shades of red, usually with splotches of pink or purple. You could always tell military Kredorakians apart from the civilians. Military wore the black or silver uniforms of the Empire. Some wore the white uniforms of GFL security. Civilians, on the other hand, wore garish outfits with clashing colors, insane patterns, and, usually, flashing lights of some kind. Shizzle, the Kraken's Kredorakian translator, was famous for his abhorrent taste in clothes. The stadium walk had ended with an elevator ride to a luxury box, where Quentin and the others sat in a large seat and looked down at the white field far below. Dark blue lines and numbers looked almost black under the dome stadium's bright lights. As the teams battled, Quentin focused on the player he decided he just had to have, Sklorno wide receiver Sheboygan.
"Barnes,"
Tokor said.
"I'm still not sold on Sheboygan. She's good, but she'd be our fourth receiver at best, and she's not that fast. What about Coverville or Minus Jureus? Both of those receivers have timed their 30-yard dash in the upper 10th percentile of all Tier 3 players."
Quentin shook his head.
"I've already got speed, coach. Haywick and Milford are blazers. I want ball control. I want receivers who can catch anything I throw at them, and who can live through the season."
The female Sklorno bodies had evolved for speed, speed, and more speed. Muscular thighs rose back and up. Narrow forelegs pointed forward and down to connect with the long, flexible feet. These grasshopper-like limbs made the species the fastest sentients in the galaxy. The legs supported a narrow, vertical trunk of a body that bent back in a slight curve, ending in the Sklorno's strange head. At the front of the small head, near the neck, 2 long raspers that could curl up hidden behind a chin plate or dangle down to the ground, revealing thousands of tiny rasper teeth. Above the chin plate, a dense crop of coarse, black hairs around 4 long eye stalks. The eye stalks move separately, letting a Sklorno see everything around her. Below the chin plate, on the body, were the long, muscular tentacles that reached out like boneless snakes to snag footballs out of the air. The physiology alone was strange enough to begin with, even without the Sklorno's coloration, which was no coloration at all. Clear skin showed fluttering, translucent muscles, transparent blood coursing through them, all wrapped around black bones that looked blurred and out of focus from the tissue surrounding them. Sheboygan's clear skin was mostly hidden, of course, by her light green and yellow Mangler's uniform and helmet. She was bigger than most Sklorno receivers. Her stats said she was stronger, and there were more factors that made Quentin want her on the Kraken's roster.
"Coach, her speed isn't top shelf, but she's still plenty damn fast," Quentin said. "Did you check out her mass to speed score and her density rating?"
John looked up from his double serving of chili fries. The word density rating seemed to leave a bad taste in his mouth.
"Huh? Q, what kind of stat is that? You mean her strength, right?"
"Not her strength, John. Mass. Her density. How tightly compacted she is."
"You mean if she's fat?"
Quentin shook his head.
"No, not that. The more mass she has, the bigger hits she can take. Combine her mass with her speed, or her velocity, and you get force. That means if I throw to her over the middle while she's moving, she has more force than a linebacker like you."
"Screw that," John said. I'm made of Megaforce. Super Megaforce, even. I'll knock her right the hell out.
Yes, John, of course you will. But not all linebackers are stone-bred monstrosities like you.
And cultured.
John pointed with a chili-covered fry for emphasis.
That part comes from Ma.
Quentin nodded.
And cultured. Anyway, the more force the receiver has, I think the better suited she is to catching passes over the middle. Defenses don't have to worry about Milford or Haywick running those routes because they don't have enough mass to take the hits without getting hurt. Right now, I can only throw short over the middle to our tight ends or our running backs. I want more options. Force equals mass times acceleration, so I want lots of force.
John popped the greasy fry into his mouth. He chewed with his mouth open and kept talking.
Mass? Acceleration? Sounds to me like you've been hanging out with that nerd Kimberlin again. He trying to make you all smart and stuff?
He's tutoring me, Quentin said. So what?
John rolled his eyes. You can't teach an old dog spilled milk scrolled across his forehead.
You're a football player, Q. How about you worry about football? I mean, do you even have an agent yet?
Quentin shook his head.
No, but I'm supposed to meet with Yitzhak's agent when I get back to Ionath. Guy's name is Danny Lundy.
John's right hand turned into an emphatic fist.
Lundy is my agent, Q. He's the man. He'll tear the tongue out of anyone who gets in your way.
Good to know.
Anyway, Q, you should just focus on football. You don't need all this physics crap. Just trust your eyes. Stop trying to be something you're not.
Quentin looked back down to the field. Something he was not? What did that mean? Was he supposed to stay ignorant just because he played football? No. No way. Kimberlin had promised that knowledge would add to Quentin's ability to lead the Krakens to a championship, not distract from it. Studying was hard work. Kimberlin demanded perfect scores, but at least some of the knowledge seemed promising. Physics, in particular. In the past 6 weeks of tutoring, Quentin had learned about things like mass, force, velocity, and conservation of momentum. He knew the actual reason why little players bounced off of big players. He knew why tacklers needed a low center of gravity and why he was putting his receivers' lives at risk if he threw too high, something called torque. He understood how air density impacted the flight of a pass. The knowledge was amazing. Kimberlin also wanted to teach useless stuff like history, but some of the species biology might prove helpful. Quentin was willing to learn anything if that knowledge would give him the edge he needed to claim the GFL title. If John didn't need such knowledge, that was John's business. But Quentin refused to feel bad about expanding his brain. Down on the field, the light green and yellow Manglers broke the huddle and lined up. The Archangels, white jerseys and turquoise helmets showing the dirt, blood, and damage of a nearly complete game, dug in, trying to protect their slim 13-10 lead. Every player on that field knew that scouts from hundreds of upper-tier teams were watching, and they played accordingly. Hokor quickly activated a palm-up display on his pedipalp, then clicked through the interface until a slowly spinning display of Sheboygan appeared.
8 feet tall, 360 pounds,
Hokor said.
Unusually large for a Sklorno. She's slow, though.
Slow for a Sklorno, Quentin said. That means she's still faster than Starcher or Jew Tweedy. All that size, moving at a high speed, coach, that's money.
Hokor looked at the stats some more, then down to the field.
I am not sure, Barnes. Speed kills.
The Mangler's quarterback took the snap and dropped back. Lights played off a light green jersey with yellow letters and numbers, the light green helmet with a yellow Saw logo on the side. Sheboygan, wearing the Sklorno version of the same uniform, ran downfield 10 yards, then angled for the deep middle on a post pattern. She drew double coverage, opening up the shallow middle on a crossing route. Quentin watched the ball sail through the air, hitting receiver Manzulli 15 yards downfield and almost directly over center. She bobbled it, reached up for it, then flew backward as a white and turquoise-clad Archangel defensive back put a shoulder pad in her chest. Manzulli fell hard, skidded, but didn't get up. The game ground to a halt as a med sled slid out of the tunnel and moved toward the prone player. Quentin checked the roster. The player who delivered the hit was number 72, a defensive tackle's number, Tim Crawford. Quentin watched the replay,
saw that Crawford had dropped off the line into coverage and closed quickly. Coach, did you see that?
Of course,
Hokor said.
Crawford is on my list of players that we want. That Mathara quarterback is throwing too high, exposing his receivers to damage. Sklorno just aren't durable enough. This is the title game, and this is the third receiver the Manglers have lost.
That's why I want Sheboygan, Coach. You see my point?
Hokor's pedipalps twitched. His three sets of antennae circled.
Barnes, most quarterbacks go for pure speed and catching ability.
I'm not most quarterbacks. I want a team that can take a punch in the mouth and keep on coming.
The med sled hovered over Manzuli, lowered thousands of nanofiber filaments that wrapped around her, lifted her without adjusting her position. The sled slid off the field, taking her to the locker room tunnel. Quentin watched the Mathara sidelines. He expected a Sklorno to run out and replace Manzuli, but instead, a Quith warrior trotted onto the field. A light green uniformed Quith warrior, the likes of which Quentin had never seen. 6 foot three or so, probably 360 pounds, this warrior's legs and middle arms looked the same as those of any member of his cast. His pedipalps, however, were long, so long they could touch the ground while he was standing straight upright. John started laughing and slapping his thigh. Half-chewed chili fries shot out of his mouth to land on the luxury box counter.
Look at the palps on that one! What a little mutie!
Ixnay on the DNA scrolled across his face. Hokor made a noise that Quinn had never heard. Kind of a half-spit, half-cough.
Disgusting,
the coach said.
That abomination shouldn't be allowed to live, let alone allowed to play.
Quinn called up his own palm-up display, scanning through the Mangler's roster until he found the warrior. He was the sixth receiver on the depth chart. Tara the Freak. The Manglers broke the huddle and lined up. Quentin felt a buzzing inside his chest, the feeling that he was about to discover something before anyone else did. Tara lined up in the slot, about 3 yards to the right of the offensive line. A Sklorno wide receiver lined up outside of him, almost to the sidelines.
Coach, Quentin said, what do you mean abomination?
Just look at those petty palps,
Hokor said.
Tara is imperfect. He is a mutant. He should be eliminated. Why his shamacath allows him to live is beyond me.
Quinn had never heard a Quith leader talk so hatefully about his own kind before. The ball snapped. The Mangler's quarterback dropped back. Sheboygan again sprinted downfield on a post pattern, her big body again drawing double coverage. Instead of running, Tara turned sideways, tucked into a ball, and rolled, the Quith warrior's strange form of sprinting. At 10 yards downfield, he popped out of the roll only long enough to change direction, tucking again before rolling left on a crossing pattern. Tim Crawford, the Archangel defensive tackle that had knocked Manzuli out of the game, again dropped back into short coverage. Tara popped out of the roll and looked back for the ball. Another poorly thrown pass, the ball again several feet too high. Tara's mutant pedipalps reached up for the catch. The big blur of turquoise and white slammed into Tara's exposed midsection, bending the Quith warrior in half. The world-class collision drew an "oh" from the crowd. Quentin watched the two players hit the ground, watched and saw that Tara had come down with the ball. A hit like that, and he made the catch?
Coach,
Quentin said.
No,
Hokor said. Tim Crawford was slow to stand. Tara, on the other hand, popped right up. A hit that might have killed a Sklorno, and Tara sprang up as if he'd done nothing more hurtful than trip over a shoelace onto a big feather pillow.
Coach, Quentin said.
Absolutely not,
Hokor said.
But coach, he...
No, I will not have that freak wearing a Kraken's uniform, and that is final.
Quentin looked at the diminutive Quith leader and tried not to laugh. Hokor's black-striped yellow fur had puffed up, making him look all soft and fuzzy. Such a display might make Hokor look frightening to a Quith warrior, but to a human, it just made him look cute.
Whatever you say, coach, just take it easy, okay? You want one of John's chili fries?
John helpfully reached out a fry covered in glistening, wet brown chili and melted cheese. Hokor looked at it, then shivered.
Humans, The things you will eat.
Hokor's fur slowly lowered back to its normal, silky, flat state. Quentin didn't need to rock the boat at the moment, but he'd seen something that he couldn't unsee. The Krakens needed toughness, durability. If that's what a mutant freak provided, then that's what the Krakens would sign.
You have been listening to The All-Pro, Season 4 of the Galactic Football League series. Written and performed by Scott Sigler. Produced by Ariok Morningstar with post-production by Steve Rickyberg. For more information on Scott and more free stories, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song The Kids Are Coming For You by the band Super Weapon. You're trying to say I'm looking at you. The kids are coming for you. Nothing you can do. They're coming for you. Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.